The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 115.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi guys, welcome to today's live stream. Just as a reminder, I want you all to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. It's this digital product I have that I partner up with awesome, amazing people like Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It's their research we have behind or in this forum, this online forum that we have of like-minded people. I think you'll really get a kick out of it. In today's age, when you're trying to figure out what you should do with your investment portfolio and what to do if we get inflation or deflation, or if you got all this dry powder in cash, but you're like, oh man, what do I do with it? If I'm worried about inflation coming down the pipeline, I don't want to lose any of my purchasing power. These are the exact things that we discuss at Rebel Capitalist Pro. So to find out more information on it, go to, that's where I'm wearing my official Rebel Capital. Well, it's not the Rebel Capitalist Pro t-shirt, but it's Rebel Capitalist t-shirt. Go to georgegammon.com/pro. Check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. But let's get right into the questions, guys. Gigi Clips asks, what sectors do you diversify in? I feel like I know nothing the more I learn. Yeah. And diversification seems to be the best solution to ignorance. Well, the way I diversify is I just separate my portfolio into three categories. I mention that all the time, but I guess it's worth repeating that 10% of it goes into what I consider insurance. So that would be physical gold. So 10% physical gold, that's insurance. Then you got 80% what I would call investments, and it has to pay me to own it. And if it doesn't pay me to own it, I don't really consider it an investment. And then you've got the other 10%, which would be allocated towards speculation. So you think it's cheap, you think it's going to go up in price, there's good asymmetry, but it's not paying you a dividend, it's not paying you rent, it's not paying you an interest rate, then that would be a speculation. And within each category, obviously with insurance, I don't diversify at all. Zero. I might diversify the location where I store the gold, but maybe I would diversify into a fund that owns the underlying asset, like Rick Rule's fund, the Sprott, maybe, but I don't know. I kind of like the physical if I can actually get it. So you might want to diversify your jurisdictions, your political risk is what I call it. But as far as the 80% that I get paid to own, I don't really think about diversification. I just think about where I'm going to get the best return, risk reward. So if I feel like I'm going to, like 2012, I didn't really know what I was doing back then at all. But I, with the little knowledge that I did have, I went almost all in with real estate. And at the time, looking back in retrospect, even if I would have known what I was doing, I probably would have done the same thing, because risk reward, I don't think there was anything as close to as good as real estate back in that time frame. When you look at the cash flow, when you look at how cheap the debt was, I didn't use much debt back then. But if you look at all the metrics, but I'm not really married to one asset class. Also, I have a huge edge in real estate investing. I didn't back then, but now I've been doing it for 8 years all over the world. And so I've got a huge edge in that I would consider myself an expert in what I do, and definitely in the markets where I do the most business, in Medellin and in the Midwest in the United States. I know those markets like the back of my hand. And so the more inefficient the market is, the more of an edge I have. So that's another reason why I wouldn't hesitate at all to have 100% of the 80% in real estate investing. But I'm not married to it. If we got to a point where I felt as though there was a much better risk reward with stocks, I would definitely consider selling my real estate, especially if the real estate was expensive and I thought that the dividend paying stocks were cheap. And I wouldn't have, I guess that's the best way to say it. I'm not married to real estate. I wouldn't hesitate to sell the real estate parlay that money into dividend paying stocks or even bonds. I mean, obviously not now. In the future, who knows what will happen. Then the speculative side, I might like a little diversity there. Like I wouldn't take all 10% and go into Bitcoin, or I wouldn't take all 10% and go into like gold miners, although I like both of those. I'd spread it out a bit, but I wouldn't go crazy with it. I wouldn't have like some sort of, broad fund. Like I wouldn't have 10 different speculations. I would just do, 5-6. But again, that's me personally. So that's kind of how I see diversification. And see, the thing is, if you got 80% of your portfolio that's paying you to own it, you don't have much downside there. Okay, King is asking me if Bitcoin is cheap. I don't know how you'd even determine if Bitcoin was cheap, because you've only got 10 years of price history, and it's really tough to figure out the intrinsic value of Bitcoin. So it's a weird asset class. It's an anomaly. And I think there's great asymmetry there. That's why I would consider owning it for this part of the speculative portion of the portfolio. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that it's cheap. I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's expensive. I don't know. Pingao 101, maybe. Trump knows he can't declare bankruptcy. So do you think he is encouraging bad monetary policy to collapse the system to implement a gold standard? Maybe Trump is playing, what do they call it, four-dimensional chess? and I just don't know about it. It's a possibility. I don't know that he has that degree of sophistication. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think the probability is low. I think the probability of that is very low. I think that's my final answer. Aaron asks, should I buy or rent in South Florida? It all depends on RV ratios. It all depends on the numbers, Aaron. So if, let's say you're in Miami and you're able to get a 0.5 RV ratio and you're looking at a $500,000 condo or $1 million condo or something, you're better off renting financially. But I know there could be some places in South Florida that have a great RV ratio where you'd be far better off with a purchase. It just really depends on the metrics. And real estate is so local, I can't just say, boom, South Florida. It's there's so many different markets in that area. When are they going to see merchandise? I don't know. It's a funny question. The last business I had, I did these huge conventions, and 2 to 3 times a year, I'd hold these conventions where we'd have 5,000 to 6,000 people for a week in one of these huge hotels. I'd basically book the entire hotel. And we, toward the end there, that was one of the things we tried to roll out, was merchandise. And it just, you make a little bit of money. You make, I don't know what we were making on it, maybe 20, 30 grand for the week, something like that. But it just really wasn't worth the headache. I know now they have these, and the hard part with merchandise was having all the sizes and trying to figure that out. And it was the inventory issues are kind of what's most challenging. But I guess now they have these new, what is it that all the YouTubers are using, where they just, it's kind of like an on-demand type of t-shirt where you just give them the creative or the artwork, and someone just submits an order, and then they do each one or something like that. I forgot what it's called, Teespring or something like that. Anyway, maybe in the future, but I'm not too focused on that right now. I'm more focused on just delivering as much value as I can for the people in Rebel Capitalist Pro and just doing the YouTube videos. Mauricio asks how he can or she can invest in real estate in Medellin. Well, it's the exact same as the United States, but you got a lot more upside and you got a lot more downside. So the differentiating factor is how much of a local expert you are in Medellin. If you don't know what you're doing and you're just a random gringo coming down there and expecting that the process is going to be just like the United States, where you just go onto the MLS and the real estate agent that's very friendly and speaks English, just shows you the available properties within the area you're looking. And then you just pick the one that you like the best and boom, wham, done. Wham, bam, you're done. You're going to get smoked. You're going to lose a lot of money doing that. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time. Because people that sell in Medellin, they don't have an MLS. They don't really put their apartments or homes up online. They just put a for sale sign in the window. So you're going to be paying gringo prices big time if you do that. So again, the process is the exact same. It's just you got to know what you're doing a lot more so than the United States. Ross asks, love the interview with Andrew Henderson of Nomad Capitalist. Yeah, Andrew's a smart kid. He's great. I really like Andrew. I've been listening to his content for 8 years. Both Andrew and Simon Black with Sovereign Man, they kind of talk about the same stuff. I really like both of them. I'd love to interview Simon. Hopefully we can do that soon for the Rebel Capitalist show. As far as setting up a bank account, I mean, the other places that I've been where I would really enjoy spending time is Southeastern Europe, Croatia, Montenegro. I know Andrew talks about Georgia all the time. So you might want to check that out when the traveling is a little bit easier. I mean, the cost of living was very, very low. Not as low as Colombia, but extremely low in those areas. Weather was gorgeous. I think ideally, when things get settled down, I'm kind of going to split my time between Puerto Rico, Medellin, and Croatia, Montenegro. And I'll spend the summers in Croatia, Montenegro, maybe winters, Medellin, Puerto Rico, something like that. Or the winter months, I should say. But I would look there personally. You might like Asia. You know, I know Chris is really bullish on Thailand, I believe. So it might be interesting to spend some time there. But first and foremost, you got to like it. So I would just book a vacation, stay there 2 weeks with the intention of setting up a bank account if you like it. And then a week into it, if you're like, man, I would love, love, love to be here for 2 or 3 months a year, then go ahead and just go down to the local bank and try to set it up. I would maybe call them in advance to figure out what you need. A lot of times there's some restrictions and it's quite a bit harder to set up a bank account outside of the United States if you're someone brand new. Like a lot of people talk about how hard it is in Medellin to set up an account. And for me, it was like 3 seconds. It was easier than setting up a bank account in the United States. Why is that? Because I've been doing business there with Alianza. Not to be confused with Allianz, but Alianza Valores, which is a big fiduciary in Medellin and in Colombia. I've been doing business with them since 2015. I mean, I know the people there on a first name basis. So it was once they saw the bank, which was Banco Colombia, they saw I had all this money and transactions with Alianza. They're like, oh yeah, no problem. Here's your bank account. If I would have just gone in there cold turkey, like some gringo coming down for two, it probably would have been harder. What would it take me to FFS Maui asks, what would it take for me to short something? I'm assuming you're talking stocks. I don't really like shorting. I mean, I'm very bearish on the fundamentals of the market, as you guys know, but I see too much downside to the short, meaning it could... I mean, the TGA, you got $1.7 trillion in there that the Trump administration can spend into the real economy. All those people take the $1.7 trillion, put it into their Robinhood accounts and buy stocks. I mean, they're going to go to the moon. You get this huge blow off top. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's a possibility. So the only way I would short something is if I had a long to hedge it. Like I was, what was I thinking about doing the other day? I was thinking about going short USO and long a producer, but I didn't do it. I was thinking about that though. And I was actually, you know what I was thinking about doing? I'm overall, I'm bearish on Tesla. I like the cars. I think they're fantastic. But as far as a stock, I just think it's wildly overpriced. and definitely not cheap. But I was actually thinking about shorting Nikola and then maybe taking a small long position in Tesla to offset it. But my main focus was the short in Nikola. And it just would have been kind of something to play around with to try to think through the strategy. But honestly, I don't like to get too cute. I just like to, I like the KISS strategy. Just keep it simple, stupid. And so generally that doesn't mean, that means staying away from the shorting side of the equation. Let's see, EB asked me personal family residence, joint ownership or trust. I'm not sure, EB, that's kind of a, I really subbed that out to my lawyer. If you want to, that's the way I look at it as an entrepreneur. But that just honestly, with stuff like that, I don't think it's worth my time. And I'm not to sound arrogant or anything, but as an entrepreneur, you've got to ask yourself, okay, what I'm doing right now, is this $20 an hour work or is this $1,000 an hour work? And if your time is worth $1,000 an hour and you find yourself doing $20 an hour work, time to get someone to handle that. And so setting up the trusts, and I've got a trust set up and all my real estate's in there. And if I get hit by a bus, then it goes to this person. And then I actually don't distribute the trust. I have that person manage it and take the cash flow and distribute it to my family members. So they're not getting one lump sum. They're just getting the cash flow from it. And it's kind of a unique way of doing it. I won't go into why I did that, but you know, once we set up, okay, I just went to the lawyer and said, what should we do? And he's like, well, I would do blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, well, I want to do it this cash flow instead of just issuing all the assets to the individual people. And they said, okay, we can just structure it here. And then I just say, okay, handle it. And then I leave the meeting and I don't even think about it. And whenever I need to sign the paperwork, I just sign it and done. I just, you got to make sure you're dealing with the right people and you got a good lawyer. But if you got a good lawyer, I kind of delegate the thinking and all the busy work to them so I can focus on what I believe is more important things like making money. I mean, same would go for accounting or anything. If you ask me a question on how to set up your chart of accounts or actually I might even be more hands-on with the chart of accounts than I would with this trust and whatnot. But obviously the key is having a good lawyer that you can trust and you know is going to do the right thing and isn't going to do something stupid, where if you do get hit by a bus, then the burden, it becomes a burden for your family members who you're trying to take care of. Oh, man, there was a good question there on Klaus and his cronies. Oh, Klaus. I could give that guy you know what all day long. I have no problem giving public figures a bunch of crap. And if they want to give me crap, if they want to say I look like a James Bond villain, that's fine. More power to them. I would love to get in a Twitter debate with Klaus. I can't find the question now. Shoot. Sorry about that. I can't find the question. It was something, their great reset. Like, what are the probabilities of it panning out? I think the probability of them trying to push this more and more and more is extremely high. I don't see them taking the pedal off the metal. I see them as just really cranking up their narrative at any opportunity they get. I think the worse it gets, the more they'll push this narrative. As far as it actually working, if you're talking about the positive effect on the overall economy and the society, and you got to remember there are some things that will definitely have a positive effect. There's always a cost benefit analysis. There's never just a cost analysis. And there's never just a benefit analysis. People like to be in one camp or the other. Like if they're for, let's say, green energy, then they like to just focus on the benefits. That's it. And then they totally ignore the costs, or they're really not realistic about the costs. But it's the same thing. The people who are anti-green energy, then all they do is look at the costs and then they just totally ignore the benefit. You got to do both to see what's best on net balance. It's always about net balance. And it goes back to one of my favorite economists, one of my favorite people of all time, Thomas Sowell, and that there are no solutions. There are only alternatives. And that's what he means by that. You got to do a cost benefit analysis because you're using scarce resources with alternative uses. So I would argue that if they were able to push this through, there would be benefits, but the costs would outweigh the potential benefits over the long term. And it's not to say that what their intentions are aren't admirable, right? Do we want to reduce discrimination? Of course we do. Of course we do. But we're not going to decrease the amount of discrimination by mandating it from Klaus and his cronies. We're going to do that by just you and I, everyday people, just trying to persuade our friends and our coworkers and our families that that discrimination just it doesn't benefit anybody. So it's just, it takes time. It takes time, and you just do it through individuals just persuading their friends and family, not by use of force. Whenever you're using force to do something, it's probably not the right thing, or it's probably not the right approach, although the intentions may be good. Question, can you look into the Fed's Exchange Stabilization Fund, ESF, and maybe make a whiteboard video explaining? Yeah, I'll definitely think about that, Aldo. I've got the couple whiteboard videos for this week kind of in my mind right now, and I'm just, in fact, this morning, I was just jotting one out on the legal pad that's over there on my couch. But maybe the week after, I'll put that in the mix.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Michael asked, should I sell my question now if I have 100K in equity in it? I can't answer that question, Michael. That you just haven't given me enough information. I don't know your personal situation. I don't know where you live. I'm sorry, my friend. I can't answer that question with the info you're giving me. Mike is asking a similar question. It's a little too broad for me to, or vague for me to answer, but I would consider it, Mike. Do you think a turnkey house to rent in Tennessee is a good investment? I like Tennessee. At least I liked Tennessee back in 2012. I know Hartman was telling me that it's getting pretty expensive now there. And I've heard from other people that you might not be able to get the RV ratios, but I know you can't get the RV ratios really in Kansas City anymore either. It all depends on the metrics, Mike. It really depends on the metrics. Okay, Cameron asks, we are seeing a lockout in the banks lending to corporations unless the loans are backed by the Fed. The entire SBA program is wrecked. Yeah. Are we entering the phase of Fed as the only lender? Well, Cameron, I think you're seeing this correctly. You're thinking about it the right way. And it's obvious you've spent some time doing some research here and understanding how these things work, because your level of understanding is higher than most. I don't know if we're at the point where the Fed is the lender. There's a lot of levels to this question, Cameron. I haven't talked about that on one of my whiteboard videos in a long time, as far as the Fed actually being in total control of lending directly, not indirectly, but directly. I would say that we're going into the era of the debt most likely moving to the Fed's balance sheet, or the Fed having an implicit backstop or maybe even an explicit backstop of them guaranteeing these loans, and therefore there's no downside for the marketplace to create the loans because they know it's going onto the Fed's balance sheet. So I don't know what you want to call that, an era of further Fed backstop, or an era of Fed backstopping traditional loans from commercial banks, or more Fed involvement, more tops down, more central planning. I mean, it's all of the above. I think that's definitely the phase we're going into. But as far as the Fed making direct loans to individuals, I think that comes down the road when we have the Fed app, when we have the Fed coin, most likely like a social score type thing, unfortunately. I mean, who knows? Maybe you have to have a vaccine to get a loan from the Fed because you're evil if you want to subject your fellow human beings to a virus, or, you know, who knows? It's always the narrative or the PR move from the central planners is it's always for your safety. For your safety. I mean, even the last time I logged on to one of my bank accounts that I have in the United States, you notice everything is they make you change your password or something. Oh, it's for your safety. Oh, okay. Yeah, right. It's for my safety. Everything. You call up the bank, or you call up AT&T or whatever, and they make you jump through all these hoops and do all these crazy things. Why? Oh, but sir, it's for your safety. Or you go to the bank and try to get out 10 grand in cash, now like 2 grand in cash, and they ask you 4,000 questions that don't have anything to do with anything at all, other than just them trying to mine for data so they can give it to the government and plug it into the NSA data bank, which, or whatever they're doing with it, right? And then you get pissed off, and you're like, okay, what does that have to do with, what does that line of questioning have to do with anything? This is my money. Give me my money that you're holding on to in the form of cash. It doesn't matter what I'm doing with it. It doesn't matter what my email address is. It doesn't matter what my, you know, what state my mother is living in. That doesn't matter, right? And then they always come back with, sir, calm down. Oh, sir, calm down. We're doing this for your security, for your safety. It's all nonsense. All nonsense. But, and I know I got off on a tangent there, but the bottom line is I think we're going to have to see the Fed app, or I'm going to call it the Freedom app for, you know, the irony, and the Fed coin. And then I think the next step is once we get into the Fed lending directly to consumers, and then it's going to be all about a political narrative and whether you're going to need to be woke enough to get a loan. That's it's going to be more based on your woke score, or your social score, than it is your credit score, because the Fed's balance sheet, they can take a haircut. It doesn't matter. Where a commercial bank, they can't take a haircut. So I don't want to get off on that topic, but, and I'm not saying that's happening. I'm saying if I had to kind of game theorize it, that's how I kind of see it playing out over the next 10, 15 years. Hopefully I'm wrong. David asks, when you started your journey on your way to financial freedom, did you look for one-on-one mentors, or were you your mentors via books, videos? Who's your most important mentor? Well, I mean, my most important mentor is my father. We never talked about business, or we never talked about entrepreneurship, or we never talked about real estate or anything like that. You know, when I was a kid, I won't go into my upbringing, but it was rather tumultuous. Not because of my parents did the best they possibly could. And they're both, amazing people, but, just because of circumstances, I had a tumultuous, upbringing, to say the least. But when I really started to see my father again was when I was about maybe 10, 11, something like that. And we'd always hang out. We'd go fish and play golf, stuff like that. But anyway, my, my, one of the most important things my father ever did, in my opinion, is, and it was a very weird way of parenting. In fact, I have never seen anyone do this before, or any of my buddies' parents. They were never like this. But no matter what I did, I was always the best. And I'm not talking about like in my father's eyes, I was always the best. He would literally say that. So I'd get an F on a test or something like that. And he'd be like, "Oh, George," he always called me Georgie boy. He said, "Oh, Georgie boy, don't worry about it. You're the smartest one in that class. Don't worry about it." I'm like, "Yeah, well, I actually got an F on this test. I don't know if I'd go that far." "Oh, those test scores don't matter. You're the smartest one in there." Or I'd plan a golf tournament and I'd get like last place or something like that. I'd come off the course and I'd be just bummed out, just depressed and almost in tears, and you know, 11, 12, 13 years old. And he'd be, "Oh, Giorgio, I don't know why you're so upset. You're the best one out there by far. I watched everyone on the driving range and you were the best one by far. I'm like, "Well, actually, it's a pretty quantifiable measurement, this golf tournament thing, because you actually score it, Dad. And whoever comes in last place actually isn't the best golfer." "Oh, those scores don't matter. Oh, I was out there. You're the best golfer." Just whatever I did, it didn't matter whether I came in first place, last place, FA. Whatever, no matter how much trouble I would get into. And I got in a lot of trouble when I was a kid. I mean, I don't want to go into that, but I was in juvenile court. And I mean, I got into a lot of trouble, way more than most kids, and to an extreme. And it doesn't even matter. I mean, I'd get sentenced to, I'd have to go to juvenile court or something like that. My mom would be freaked out about it. "Oh my gosh, George, he's going to be, in prison, his life. He's not going to graduate from high school or whatever." And my father would come, "Oh, don't worry about it. He's going to be fine. He's going to be great. He's going to be the best. He's going to be like an irrational sense of confidence in my abilities." But so I think that helped me more than anything, because it just gave me a mindset, right or wrong, that I could achieve anything and I could pull it off. And maybe it's justified, maybe it's not, but I've done all right so far. So that would be first and foremost. Now, as far as a business mentor, I just tried to get information and wisdom from everyone around me. And when I started working for a couple people out of college, and while I was doing consulting work, and I would see people who are more successful than I was in the business, and I would say, what are these guys doing? You know, what are these gals doing? What can I take from them and maybe improve on?" So I was just trying to learn from everybody. And then when in 2005 or so, there was someone that I sold a business to, and he kept me on as a consultant. And he was a former CEO in Silicon Valley. And I learned a lot from him. I mean, a ton. And I mean, I still kind of think back to those days whenever I'm trying to think of a direction I should go. But I've learned from all those people along the way. As some business partners, I learned a ton from them. And then in 2012, when I retired, I really didn't have anyone around me as far as my socials circle that was a sophisticated investor or knew anything about macro. So that's when I defaulted to the audiobooks, to the videos, to the YouTube videos, the podcasts. And I would list Milton Friedman up there with the first person that really influenced my thinking. But he didn't influence that much. He just articulated everything that I already had in my head from my years of being an employee and an employer. And, you know, I started working at 15 in Portland, Oregon, where I grew up. And I had always had at least two or three jobs, even through college. You know, I almost flunked out of high school, like I always say. But I did end up going to college, and I had two, three jobs all throughout college. Even in high school, I always had a couple jobs. So always working very hard there. But my point is, with those audiobooks and with the podcast and with the YouTube videos, I found Milton Friedman, and that kind of took me on to Thomas Sowell. And then I stumbled across Jim Rogers. And Jim Rogers, my father passed away when I was in 2005. He was a lot older than my mom, to say the least. But I won't go into that too much. But my father passed away when I was in 2005, and I was extraordinarily close to my father, which you can imagine. And when I first saw Jim Rogers, honestly, he reminded me of my father. Jim Rogers' mannerisms are it's like they're brothers or something. It's weird how similar their mannerisms are. And so that's like the first time, like, man, he really reminds me of dad. But then I listened to him talk and I'm like, this is the guy I need to be listening to. And so I got his books, his audios, books. I forgot a couple of them, and the ones that are focused on investing. And we took the motorcycle ride around the world. I think Adventure Capitalist that was. And I just listened to every single YouTube video he did in every single interview, because it just made so much sense. And then also too, because whenever I watched one of his videos, this day it still reminds me of my father, which is nice. It's kind of cool. But from there, guys like Mark Faber, Jim Grant, Jim Rickards, Peter Schiff, Rick Rule, Doug Casey, Tom Woods, Bob Murphy, more Austrian economists. I got into all of that. Then I started, I read all the Market Wizards books, and that turned me on to, actually, I read the Market Wizards books back in 2000. And that's what really got me into blackjack. And that's when I started following guys like Stan Druckenmiller and whatnot, and kind of the guys you hear about as far as the trading pros. And then in 2012, it's more the Austrian guys and like the hard money guys. So that's kind of my mentorship journey, if you will. Xavier, I saw your question, buddy. There we go. We know how you feel about gold and silver as a store of value. How do you feel about it as a growth vehicle, namely gold and silver mining stocks? Yeah, so I see those as two completely separate asset classes, Xavier. I see gold, and more so gold than silver, as that insurance, but I see the miners as speculative assets. So totally different. And so I guess to answer your question, I see them as a growth vehicle for sure. I bought a ton of gold mining shares back in March. I haven't bought any since. I'm not going to say they're cheap. They're expensive. I think they're probably still really cheap if you look at them historically and how much money has been printed and how much base money we have and what I think is coming down the pipeline in the next, call it 3-5 years of stagflation. I would say they're still pretty darn cheap. But personally, I haven't bought any since March. But definitely see them as a growth vehicle, yeah. Jeff asks, love the channel. If we are certainly looking at inflation, well, no, there's no certainties, Jeff. So I want to be clear there. You can have an opinion on something. I have an opinion on something, but it's definitely not a certainty. I mean, there's some fantastic arguments from gentlemen like Dr. Lacey Hunt, my good buddy Jeff Snyder, that would argue for kind of a deflationary. But again, that's nuanced. They're more talking about assets. And when I'm talking about inflation, I'm talking about consumer prices. I think Jeff would also say he sees consumer prices potentially coming down, but maybe not for a long period of time. But I don't want to put words in his mouth. But my point is there's no certainties. I think it would make sense to take out a loan, invest in physical assets, but only if those assets pay you to own them. Like, I wouldn't take out a personal loan to buy gold. And I think that might be kind of what you're getting at there. I would take out a personal loan to buy a fantastic, great cash flowing rental property. and then take the additional cash flow, my positive cash flow every month, and buy gold. I would do that. But I would make sure that the asset was throwing off enough cash flow to more than pay for the debt service or the, you know, the principal and interest that you're paying monthly. See, Brahms asks, what are your thoughts on what the ECB is doing right now? I'm not sure what you're referring to specifically. I don't really study Europe that much. I obviously get super hyper-focused on the Fed and the U.S., so I don't know if I've got very much information for you there. I mean, as far as the Eurozone government bond yields being negative, the first thing that would come to my mind is their retail banking systems, toast, done, put a fork in them. And when I mean retail banking system, I mean the small banks that Werner always talks about being the growth engine of the economy. I mean, obviously it's the entrepreneur, but as far as facilitating those entrepreneurs, I think Werner hits the nail on the head that if you've got these small banks that are kind of more aligned and understand the local entrepreneur a lot better and what their projects are, it's a much more desirable approach than just having these five ginormous banks that don't care about lending to anyone other than these huge corporations where they can just make billions and billions of dollars. So when you have an environment where the yield curve is very flat, inverted, or you have negative interest rates, that makes it almost impossible for these small retail banks to make money. And now the Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan's are still going to make money because they're so much of their revenue is through trading and through the stock market going up and down and doing these, you know, taking companies public and whatnot. It's not on lending money to the average Joe and Jane. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind is that the retail banks, the small community retail banks, I'd be very bearish on those. They're going to have a tough time.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Oh, I did a question there from someone who is 16 years old. Let me get to that. That's cool. Skyler, thanks for watching, Skyler. I appreciate it, buddy. I'm 16 and it looks like I'm going to get 15 grand from unemployment. Jeez. Wow. Okay. What should I do while I'm still in high school? I like the idea of starting a business right now, but now might not be a good time. Skyler, if I was 16 years old, I would take that money. I would put it in the bank first and foremost. Don't spend it. Don't touch it. Don't do anything with it. Maybe buy a thousand, you know, maybe buy a gold coin or something like that just to kind of get your feet wet. But just don't do anything right away. Just be very, very patient. Just put it in the bank, set it there. And then what I would do is I would get online and I would look up a buddy of mine, Miles Beckler. I would go to YouTube. I would subscribe to his YouTube channel. I would subscribe to his podcast because he is one of these professional digital marketers and he is legit. He is not one of these scam guys or, you know, someone that's trying to get you to buy all these crazy programs or anything. And he gives away all of his information for free. It's all free. And so just go to his YouTube channel. I think he started it like 3 years ago. and just go back to like the first video and just like power watch every single one of those things. And even more recently, he's been doing these podcasts where he walks you through how to start a blog, how to start your own YouTube channel, your own podcast, how to make money online, how to deliver value to an audience, and then monetize the value. He talks about all these things. And you're 16, you got a lot of time. Probably you got a lot more time than money, and says, some people have more money than time, and use that to your advantage. That's your greatest resource. And I would just try to figure out what, by listening to Miles, I would try to figure out what type of online business I wanted to start, what type of content I wanted to create. And then I would do that. I'd build it around a website and just use, like, it only cost you maybe $500 out of the 15 grand, and just keep the 14.5 in the bank and don't touch it, and then see how it goes. And if it goes well, great. If it doesn't, then I'd think of another niche and I'd do that, and I'd get better. I'd improve. And then sooner or later, if you do it two or three times, and if you fail wisely, meaning you're learning from every single time you fail, then that fourth or third or fourth try, you're going to have a winner. And if you're only spending $500 a try, you've only spent maybe $1,500, maybe $2,000 before you have a winner. And then you're on to, if you stick with it and you focus on it for a year or two and keep just delivering value, as much value as you can, it's all give. And by the end of 2 years, you'll probably have a nice little side hustle where you're making $2,000 or $3,000 a month. And then I would save that money. And when you get into, I don't know if you're going to college, right now I don't see any upside in college at all, but I'm not going to make that decision for you. I think there are some reasons to go to college if you want to focus on something specific, where a specific skill. But I would, regardless of whether it's when you get out of high school or when you get out of college, or maybe when you're in college, I would take the money that you're saving from your side hustle every single month that you've created by watching Miles's videos, and I would buy a triplex or a fourplex, and I would live in one unit, and then I would allow those other three renters or two renters you have to pay your mortgage, your property taxes, the maintenance costs. So you've got that bit of positive cash flow coming in, and then you never have to worry about a housing payment, whether that's rent, whether it's in the form of a mortgage. And then you've got your side hustle bringing money in, and you can take the money that you would have spent on rent or a mortgage, and you can add that to the pot. And then I'd take that and just continue to invest it. If you like real estate, stick with the real estate game. Buy your 10% a month in, or 10% in gold, and maybe have a portfolio like I kind of outlined there, where you've got 80% of it that's paying you to own it. You go through that, Skyler, and I can promise you, if you're ambitious, if you're hardworking, if you're a problem solver, if you can manage people, by the time you're my age, you're gonna be all good. You're gonna have plenty of money. You're gonna be financially secure, and you're going to thank your 16-year-old self every single day you wake up. I can promise you that. Omar is asking if I'd recommend PR Puerto Rico real estate. It's getting interesting. It's getting interesting. I wouldn't have recommended it maybe a year ago, but from what I'm seeing on Zillow, and I haven't done too much research because I'm not there kind of boots on the ground, which hopefully I will be soon. I'm seeing prices come down, and I'm seeing prices come down a lot to the point where in some areas you could get like a 0.8, maybe even a 1% RV ratio. And if I could get a 1% RV ratio in Condado, the place where everyone wants to be, I'm really going to consider that, because you've got something that's not as tied to the U.S. housing market. It's not in this massive bubble. It's actually, things are getting cheap, getting more and more and more expensive. But it's dollar denominated. So, I mean, I need to put some more dollars to work. So that would be a great avenue for me. That would be a great opportunity to go in there and buy a dollar denominated asset, have dollar denominated cash flow and cheap real estate. I don't know where you can get cheap real estate denominated in dollars. That's rare in today's day and age, or in a currency that's pegged to the dollar. So yeah, I'd start checking it out for sure. Okay, we'll do one more question. FSH Sun Limit 21 is asking me, in St. Bart's, they actually have apartments you can rent. Nah, not really. They're these villas. All I see are hotels. Yeah, but see, all the hotels, or most of them, are closed right now because of what's going on. But they don't have any restrictions, or they have very little restrictions on everything else. When you go to a restaurant, although they request you wear a face mask, I mean, no one does. And the gym, I've been going there almost every day. It's totally normal. It's as normal, I think, as you can get right now in the world. And so there's no restrictions. It's except there's a few of those hotels that are closed. Other than that, a couple of the shops are still closed, but it's as close to normal as you can get. But the downside is it is wildly expensive. And I mean, I won't go into specific numbers, but I've got this place right here, which is basically kind of an apartment. I mean, they call it a villa, but it's kind of like a, I don't know, maybe 1,000 square feet, something like that, apartment. Obviously, it's in a real nice area. You got the palm trees and it's just awesome. It's gorgeous here. But I am paying the same for this per month as I was the last time I lived in Phoenix. The difference is, when I lived in Phoenix, I had how big was it? Probably 4,000 square feet, $2 million condo. So you got a $2 million, 4,000 square foot condo, furnished, by the way, that I was paying the same as I am for this little place here in St. Bart. So there is a downside there where it is massively expensive. The other downside too is the Wi-Fi is brutal. It is brutal. And it's consistent across the island. You guys would not believe the logistical challenge and the hoops that I've had to jump through just to upload the whiteboard videos to YouTube, like that I've done this last week. It's crazy. I have to shoot the video in the morning. Then I have to go to this one restaurant in town in Gustavia. There's one restaurant that has internet speed fast enough where I can upload these to my editors. And then I upload them through WeTransfer, and then my editors edit it, you know, throughout the afternoon. And then finally they can upload it to YouTube. But it takes me, it's like an all day process just to get these things uploaded. So that's definitely no bueno. That's the no bueno zone for sure. Food is very expensive. Gas, no, gas is the same. And it doesn't really matter, because I lost my license like 6 months ago. I physically lost it. I didn't get it like taken away or something. And so I don't have a physical license. So the only thing they'll rent me is this little 50cc scooter. It won't even go up the hills. It's terrible. It's like that the scooter they had on Dumb and Dumber. And so now I'm paying like $4 a week for gas, because it only takes like a gallon. And anyway, that's my 50cc scooter. So you can always just get one of those things. They've got a lot of electric cars here you can rent if you have a driver's license. And so anyway, that's St. Bart's in a nutshell. You know what? I went snorkeling yesterday for the first time in this reserve they have on the other side of the island. And oh man, guys, I've been snorkeling all over the Caribbean and in Colombia and, you know, Belize and man, it was so cool. The beach was just gorgeous. It's the most pristine, incredible beach. I mean, I can't even describe it. No way I can articulate it. And I saw a stingray and I saw a shark. And you know, it wasn't a big shark. It was maybe, I don't know, probably 3 feet, something like that. But maybe 4 feet. But they have barracuda down there and they have those sea turtles. I wasn't able to see any of those, but I'm going to go back maybe this week and try to check one of those out. So it's a gorgeous place here for sure. All right, guys, I'm going to have to end it there to get to all of my other responsibilities for the day, if you want to call them that. I want to do some shout outs to everyone who stayed until the end. And I want to remind everyone to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. And you can do that on georgegammon.com/pro. If you're wondering on how to invest in today's crazy world environment, how you can not only survive but thrive with all these central banks and Klaus and the World Economic Forum and all of these global elites, check out Rebel Capitalist Pro at georgegammon.com/pro, because that's what we're talking about in the forum. That's what Chris McIntosh is always talking about. Same thing with Lynn Alden. This Tuesday, I've got a live stream with Lynn where we're going to be here, where we're going to be going over her research as well as answering member questions. So definitely check that out. But as far as the shout outs, Gareth, thank you. Michael, thank you. Brendan, thank you. Z Grilled Cheese, thank you as well. Ultimate Bargains, I always see you here, buddy. Thank you very much. Lawrence, Jagdish, Michael, Metal Bum, Swiss Army Nick, Jeff Siegel, Law Circe, Dr. Tech, M88, made by Liam B. Lola Green, Dave Tech Canada, Emily. I think I always see her here too. Arthur, always see Arthur. Thanks for joining me again, Arthur. All right, guys, we'll leave it at that, and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.